this Papatūānuku Kōkiri are on a mission to reconnect people with real food. They are seeing quite clearly that much of the consequences of poverty or drug, alcohol, crime, whatever, where people are on the bottom of the heap, is about the nourishment, about the food imbalance, the disconnect. This is where I get really emotional when I see and hear about these large numbers of dialysis machines at Middlemore Hospital, where there's a queue of people, the single biggest concentration of Polynesians in the history of the planet, and they're suffering all manner of diet-related illness, the gout, the diabetes. And here we are, as a nation, exporting millions and millions of kilos of high-value oily fish like skipjack tuna for $2.50 a kilo.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I am Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. I live very close to Snells Beach up north, and what I am continuing to see disturbs me. There are two high tides twice a day, and on days that are not windy, I will see people wading or rowing out with nets, corralling fish, and dragging the nets up onto the beach very regularly. Maybe two or three groups spread up the beach, but I have seen up to six groups at one time. So I go out and see what they're catching. Sometimes I see six or seven fish, sometimes maybe 14 or 17, and sometimes maybe one or two. But the numbers are not big. And then they'll repeat their performance time and time again. I see that they are catching piper, or mainly piper. They are like mini swordfish. I ask them the Maori name for piper. Dunno, they say. I ask them where the spawning grounds. No, dunno. So I then ask them where are the nurseries. Dunno. So as you can see, these people have no awareness. They're unconscious. They are walking desire bodies, consuming without thought of the future. They seem to be only programmed to take. They have no understanding of reciprocity. They do not give and take. We breathe in and out. That is how it works. These people need to see how long they can hold their breath in and keep it in. This is the consciousness that we are dealing with in these very trying of times. What are they used for? Bait, often bait, but sometimes for the cat to eat. Many of the beaches in New Zealand are being fished out, close to the waterline. We need to have a rahui. Close the beach down for 6 weeks, for 2 months, a year, or once or twice a month. This way, we can take care of our children's future. And a rahui, that's Māori, for locking someplace away to allow nature to regenerate. That's what we need. In the studio this morning, I have Scott McIndoe of legacy.co.nz, which is a citizen-initiated group based here in this country with a growing number of members working together to rebuild New Zealand's inshore fisheries. So, kia ora, Scott.
Kia ora, Tim. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Yes, Scott, New Zealand's fish. We have got the fourth largest economic zone of fisheries on our planet. We have so many fish, and yet for some unknown reason, we can't even take care of our inshore fisheries. And I want to be able to talk about this, but you're involved with Legacy. So what are Legacy, and who are they, and how do you go about doing what we need doing here?
Tim, in 2012, our parent organisation, the New Zealand Sport Fishing Council, established Legacy as a public outreach. The purpose of Legacy is to get out beyond the 35,000 fishing club members in 58 clubs and talk to the vast number of people who either love their fishing, do a bit of fishing, get a few fish from those of us who do go fishing, or simply just like the idea of having abundant inshore fisheries. So that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years. We also encourage people to make contributions. It's about spreading the load of the work required to engage with complex ministry-led management processes.
This is from the government when you say ministry.
Correct. The world's leading internationally acclaimed quota management system. They never miss an opportunity to tell us how great they are in terms of management, science-based, and how incredible the information is, etc., etc. Every time we say something to the contrary, of course, that's dismissed as anecdotal.
Yes, well, I know we have seen that this management system is flawed, hugely flawed, and there's so many untruths coming about it. However, to get back on with legacy, how are you doing there?
We're doing very well, we believe. We're working on developing our database. We have approximately 45,000 people subscribed, saying, yes, please, keep me posted, let me know what's going on. We committed to earning the respect of those people and taking them from subscriber to becoming supporter and, in many instances, contributors. It's heartening, it's uplifting to have people come in out of the blue, $10, $20, $50 a month. It's all about monthly recurring revenues, and we're now proud to say that we are distributing $100,000 per annum to the New Zealand Sport Fishing Council, who carefully administer and wisely invest that money in relevant research, long overdue, and much needed engagement, participation in these complex processes. We have a team of five contractors who are deeply engaged. Passionate people have been doing this for 20 odd years on average. We've got young and old. They benefit from the lessons learnt, the hard won lessons of the 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9 journey through the High Court, Appeal Court, and Supreme Court, where we took the minister and the ministry on with what we regarded as illegal and poorly conceived management for the kahawai, the ubiquitous, the people's fish. So we take those judgments. Thank you, Justice Rhys Harrison. Thank you, Chief Justice Sean Elias. We take those beautiful judgments where full costs were awarded in our favour against the ministry and the minister, where those costs were paid and neither of those parties appealed that High Court judgment. Sadly, Sanford's Sea Lords did what Sanford's Sea Lords do. They'll go and go and go. So we found ourselves tramping all the way through to the end of the Supreme Court odyssey, and I'm comfortable with the outcome. The Supreme Court ruled that the minister shall allow for public interests, recreational fishing interests, and may set the total allowable commercial catch at zero if he or she is reasonable.
Oh, wow. Very interesting, because with an election on the horizon, Scott, what are the policies that you want? Because our fisheries and marine environment, as you know, are currently mismanaged for the benefit of a few heavyweight industrialists. And after 30 years and repeated examples of dysfunction, including reports of widespread labour abuse, fish dumping, misreporting and monopoly institutional stagnation, the time is right to really return to the basic principles of managing New Zealand's natural resources for the benefit of the people, for the benefit of our nation.
Kia kaha. You said that beautifully, Tim. I'd like to quote Milton Friedman, who once famously said, "Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around." And that, I believe, is our basic function, to develop alternatives to the existing policies, to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes the politically inevitable. So, for this upcoming election, we have prepared a manifesto. We have five policies that we will be assessing all political party policy statements for and giving a pretty objective measurement against these five, and they're very simple. Our first one is we believe that we need to establish a Royal Commission of Inquiry into the fisheries management and the quota management system. Nothing less than a Royal Commission is required to restore public confidence in the management of our inshore fisheries.
Good. I want to cut in here. I want to make sure that there's no insiders in this Royal Commission, because quite often we get old retired businessmen or old retired political party members going in there and getting their $1,500 a day to oversee this. We need some very good, insightful, neutral people to make sure that there is a quality involved in this Royal Commission.
Well, I take aboard that good advice. The makeup of the commission, if in fact we ever achieve that, will be very much an outcome of this election. I think it's fair to say that the incumbent, the National Party, are very closely aligned with the commercial sector. For us to get over the line with an inquiry is against the run of play, full stop. We're very seriously considering initiating a citizens-initiated referendum. That'll take 18 months from now to get a non-binding answer one way or the other. If it's National in power, who knows? If we have an alternative, well, we're forever hopeful. Recently, the CEO of Seafood New Zealand, a representative organisation of all sectors, wrote in an update that the deteriorating public perceptions put us, the fishing industry, in a dangerous position in the lead-up to a critical general election, with a resurgent opposition aligned with environmentalists that may be unsympathetic to fishing. So we read into those words of the CEO of Seafood New Zealand a pretty close alignment with the status quo, the laissez-faire.
Correct.
So we know we've got a long way to travel. That's good advice, thank you, on that makeup of the inquiry. Having said that, second policy. Whilst we've defended the Fisheries Act through all of the courts in the land against the minister, ministry, Sanfords and Sea Lords, who would have us believe that they can influence that act or influence its interpretation, we have identified a gap in our act, and that is an allocation principle. If you like, a memorandum of intent for the benefit and guidance of future ministers.
Yes.
Something we would like to see Colin Moyles promise, the then Minister of Fisheries in the 80s, where he said, government's position is clear. Where a fishery is insufficient to provide for both commercial and non-commercial, preference shall be given to the non-commercial, the public. So we would like to see that in the legislation. Again, under the current regime, aspirational, wishful. Under a fresh regime, new policy settings are possible. So with that allocation principle, we can get on with the job of managing fisheries instead of this perpetual arm wrestle about the commercial sector simply trying to upgrade their property right. What they own are shares in the total allowable commercial catch. What they would like to own are shares in the total allowable catch, if you like, the big picture. Well, they simply don't. They do not have a proportional arrangement. They never had, and they never will, as far as we are concerned. They've been given an allocation to catch and sell. When they start treating that with respect, when they stop trashing that allocation with their disgraceful, appalling trawling, when they stop destroying the benthic environment and the biogenic habitats and communities that depend upon a untouched seafloor, well, then we might be able to take them seriously and have a conversation about some additional total allowable commercial catch. In the meantime, they've got what they've got, and they've got to come to terms with that and stop harassing government to fold the public into the quota management system.
Right. Well, one of the things is that the commercial sector are taking 94% of the fish in this country, and only 6% are for the recreational fishermen. Well, gosh, this is... And they're wanting more. They're wanting more.
Well, that's the overall figures. It is quite startling, and certainly when you start to put the economy of these sectors alongside one another, it becomes ludicrous. Nearly, we'll say $1.8 billion is the latest industry claim for export receipts, plus an unknown domestic economy. What we know is that with the fish that we're catching, which are approximately 10,000 tonnes, that's 10,000 kilos, 10 million kilos, that's our total harvest, up against a commercial in excess of 300,000 tonnes. When we add up the money, the economy, if you like, that the public invest to participate, and remember, it is about participating, some of us only get to cook it. Some of us get to clean it.
Yes.
Some of us get to take it to the rubbish tip, which is another dark side of our fishing.
Yes.
But that is a participation, whether we like it or not. The fishing itself is enjoyable. In fact, for many, it's a sacred activity. It's the place we go when we need to have a break, when we need to just come to terms with who and what we are to this remarkable place we live. So that 600,000 odd people who participate are spending approximately $1,000 million, of which $130 million is GST, heading straight to the central scrutiniser. There's another $35 million of PAYE from the 8,000-plus jobs that are generated by recreational fishing. That compares to the 20-odd thousand jobs in the commercial sector. Remember, they're catching 95% of the whole. We're pulling our weight with 8,000, and then there's another pesky 15 million odd unallocated road user charges on the petrol we feed our Hondas and Yamahas. So we're paying approximately $200 million in taxes to participate, to engage, to do our fishing. We're catching 10 million kilos. There's a simple sum there that tells me that we're not very efficient. We're paying about $20 per kilo of fish caught.
Yes.
And then we give it away. Mm. We share it with our friends. That's really deep need to express that manaakitanga, that generosity that fishing allows us.
Yeah, sharing in the community. Because I see there that you're wanting really to have the removal of industrial fishing methods such as trawling and Danish seining and dredging from our inshore zone. This is really hammering the fishermen.
We've just got to get off the bottom. There is no room for mobile methods dragging across the bottom. How dare they? They get up in the morning, which way am I going to go? It's a toss of a coin. They put the gear over the side and they trash the bottom. They destroy everything that's in the way of that heavy gear. The millions and millions of tiny little organisms. Remember, when a fish is born, there's no nappies, there's no daycare. It's eat or be eaten from day one. And they go to the bottom. They're hiding behind any three-dimensional structure that they can find, a shell or a bottle or a piece of seaweed, a bryozoan or a coral. They just want to hide. They want to eat. They just want to get on with being a tiny, tiny, tiny little fish. And boom, along comes Mr. Big. The trawl doors gouging a deep scar in the bottom, the sweeps knocking over anything that's standing up, and then the net itself, which is just this Armageddon for anything that's in the way, indiscriminate bulk harvesting, and the real biggie, the resuspension. Up into the water column goes the last year or two or three or ever since the last trawler went past, this massive quantity of fine silts and sediments washing.
Mud.
Mud. And that the tide moves in and the tide moves out, and it takes this brand new plume of resuspended sediments, and it just drops down on top of all the other little organisms that are alongside the trawl lane and suffocates them. Suddenly the clear, clean water that they need to survive is just a cloud of glug. And they're choking and gasping, literally the same as we would be if we were stuck in a room full of smoke or whatever. That's unseen. It's uncounted. There's no allowance for that impact on our tiny little vulnerable creatures. Then they bring this bag full of stuff up to the surface, pounce on the fish that have got value. They get the royal treatment, then the next lower value, then the next lower value, then the next, until whatever is of little or no value, flap, flap, flapping, it's given up flapping, it's now deceased.
Yes.
That just gets scraped over the side.
This is the problem, because I've seen enough on Facebook to see what fish are floating on the water. Gurnard and etc. When gurnard wasn't the fish that they were looking for, they were looking for either terakihi or snapper. And so this is a huge, huge problem for New Zealanders to realise that fish that is not in that particular quota has to go over the side.
Yeah, well, it could be retained. There are systems in the system to allow for that catch. Note, I will not use the word bycatch. It's catch. When you put a net over the side, it's catch.
Correct.
And we have a situation where, because of the quota management system, many of the fishermen, who by and large don't own the rights to catch fish, shares in the total allowable commercial catch, they own a thing called annual catch entitlement. Many of them can't get enough of that ACE, annual catch entitlement, to cover species like snapper. There's plenty of annual catch entitlement for gurnard and John Dory, but there's never enough for that number one target species snapper. So there's all sorts of odd behaviour. I've got to be careful about what I say, but we do know this, that there's no value to the fishing industry in a 20-pound snapper. They cannot make that justify the rent that's needing to be paid for the right to catch it. And what happens to them is anybody's guess. They have a process called deemed value, where the fisherman shall, not may, shall return that fish and land it and pay a fine, if you like, for fish they don't have annual catch entitlement for. It's quite complex. That's a product of this world-leading, internationally acclaimed quota management system.
Yes, it's a major challenge. Because one of the other things is that when they're fishing, they're bringing in these large snapper and they're full of eggs, they're full of roe. We have to take that into consideration, because a farmer does not send a cow to the freezing works if it has a calf inside it, or a pig to a freezing works if it's full of piglets, but we're still prepared to pull a snapper or a fish out of the sea when it's full of eggs.
Yeah, and that's all they are. They're just eggs. We do send our cows to the freezing works when they're full of eggs, but not calves. We don't have... There's a different biology.
Correct.
It's quite complex. There's an FAQ on the legacy, www.legacy. That's LegaSea.co.nz. That goes some way to talking to this dilemma of fishing for a spawning fish. It gives me an opportunity to say, hang on a moment, we're very snapper-centric. We continually come back to talking about snapper.
Yes.
But snapper is but one of the many species of this mixed inshore fin fishery. So many of those species are no longer part of our bag. John Dory. I haven't personally caught a John Dory for a very long time. I've forgotten what a gurnard looks like.
Or sounds like after it comes out of the water.
Aren't they? Wasn't that the treat as a child? We always had those little things grunting away in the bin.
Yes.
Trevally, sacred for me, number one fish, not part of my catch anymore. Maybe if I was to have a spotter plane to help me and an industrial tuna fishing piece of technology, a purse seiner, I might be able to get in amongst a few trevally. Let me offer a case study, by the way, on trevally.
They're very good for sushi. They're delightful for sushi.
To die for.
You're right. The Japanese people can't believe it. They're so cheap in this country.
Try smoking a trevally. Try putting your trevally in a green Thai curry. It is the most versatile, fabulous, and big yield off a fish. So our collective catch, public, approximately 200 tons. We don't know exactly, and we never will. But the catch estimation methodology that NIWA have developed.
NIWA?
The National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research, and some very high quality science in that department, led by Bruce Hartle. He has developed what is now widely acknowledged as the best, most sophisticated, progressive recreational catch estimation methodology, where he's bringing so many different data sets together, the ramp surveys, the diary surveys, the phone surveys, and now putting it all together, the glue with the aerial survey, where they're using sophisticated sampling and auditing techniques to produce remarkable estimates of what we're catching, particularly in this Hauraki Gulf Marine Park Area 1.
In Auckland.
The northeast coast of Aotearoa. We really know what we're talking about when it comes to recreational catch estimation. So nationwide, it's estimated we're catching about 200 tonnes of trevally. The commercial catch entitlement is 3,000 tonnes. They're only able to catch 2,000 tonnes. So there's no quota management system per se. There's no shortage. There's no constraint. They can't catch and never have been able to catch what they've been allowed to or entitled to catch. So, yeah, okay, so commercial catch 2,000 tonnes. What's the problem with that? Well, my problem is that 800 of those tonnes, year after year after year, are being exported whole, frozen, no added value, no GST, full container loads to Saudi Arabia, France, and United Kingdom. So what? What's the problem, people say to me? Well, what price are they getting? We're paying $12 a kilo for the same fish in our shop, including GST. You'd like to think they're getting $5 or $6 or $7 a kilo for that premium, number one grade, top-of-the-shelf sushi. No, $2.70, I'm afraid, and that's a peak price. Any export of these inshore finfish that we really care for, like the kawai or the blue mackerel or the jack mackerel or the skipjack tuna or the trevally, these pelagics which are scooped up in vast quantities by the industrial purse seine fleet, which is only half a dozen boats operating out of Tauranga and Nelson, to be sold for less than $5 a kilo is an insult. To be sold for $1.70 or $1.60 a kilo in the case of the kawai to the Africans, the Cameroon and Cote d'Ivoire and so forth, where at least they're being eaten by humans, which is better than the couple of hundred tons they're still selling to Australia at $1.20 a kilo. I don't know what that's about. They must be old stock, a bit freezer burnt, being flicked off into a pet food factory or crayfish bait.
That's it.
But it's not acceptable behaviour. If you cannot get $5 a kilo, leave it in the jolly water.
Yes.
Allow for abundance. Allow for a better size of fish, which might be worth a bit more money. Allow for a lower cost of catching. This is basic 101 business ethic. But no, we've got this slavish, I've got quota, therefore I am, therefore I will. And we just keep on hammering these fish down. Before the show, Tim, we were teasing each other about the word sustainable.
Yes.
And how I refuse to use that word in the context of fishing unless it's accompanied by its sister, the word depletion, sustainable depletion. How low can we go? How much can we catch to maximise the sustainable yield and hold these fisheries down on the canvas, on a knife edge, on this ridiculous state of depletion, one after another, until such time as the inevitable, the unavoidable consequence of a natural phenomena, it might be climatic or food supply or just the revelation of the giant lie that is the quota management system, comes to haunt us and we have to take dramatic action. So sustainable depletion is the name of the game. That's what industry consistently advocating in their submissions. More, 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 more. The non-commercial position consistently saying less, 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 and we're willing to come to the table and talk about how we can constrain ourselves, how can we shift our attitudes, expectations, and behaviours to generate a rebuild, to have abundance.
That's infuriating at so many levels, because sustainable, let's face it, I heard that when the Clark government left and the new National Party came in, there was an interdepartmental memo sent from the Prime Minister's department to all other departments. Do not use the word sustainable in an ecological context, but you can use it in business context. But ecology, which is the most important aspect of sustainability, because we want to take care of our children and grandchildren and their collective future.
Yeah, so we've got this Fisheries Act that sort of crosses between ecology and commerce. It switches back and forth.
Yes.
And with someone, one sector catching 95% and tons of money, lots and lots of money, and listeners will see that money, literally see that money, being invested in large quantities right now by the Seafood New Zealand conglomerate as they go out there with a campaign to shift people's perceptions. You know,
TV advertising.
Oh, it's a saturation. As the CEO says, we have to be seen to be doing the right thing. And so how do we do that? Money. Lots of money. And unattractive behaviour made good with selecting beautiful people. New Zealanders doing a good job. As a rule of thumb, we don't have an issue with the people doing the fishing. The tension rests between the TACC owners, the landlords, if you like, who have cornered or monopolised the ownership of these catch entitlements, and public interest.
Yeah, it's a big one. See, Scott, prior to industrial fishing, the inshore zone was highly productive, providing nursery functions for dozens of species and supporting marine diversity through layers of ecosystem services. Well, you've covered quite a bit about this, but really, I mean, a century of ever-expanding use of heavy bottom contact mobile gear. This is a big one, and you've covered this too, but I want to bring this to the consciousness of people listening. I mean, the whole seafloor has changed, and so we have huge, huge problems with that. But now I'm wanting to know, how can we galvanise listeners' support for a much-needed change? As I said, we've got this election coming, and we need to get people to shift their backsides off the couch and to be involved. New Zealand was once a country where we did get out, and we wrote many submissions. We got out and went to meetings, and we went on rallies and marches to protest on so many levels. What do we need to do?
Well, you don't have to go far. My standing question is, Tim, may I please have your permission to subscribe you to the Legacy Database? Will you give me that privilege, that permission, to communicate with you?
I do, yes.
Thank you. So you're giving the time of day. That's really all Legacy is asking of you, listener. Would you please subscribe to the Legacy Database, or simply send Scott at Legacy, Scott at Legacy, an email, and I'll do it for you. Or ring me at 021 Macindo, 021 Macindo, 622-463, and have a chat. It's just about getting people engaged with reliable, professional, courteous, less is more, regular updates. With an informed public, I'm confident we will secure a moment in time with where our alternative policies, today politically impossible, become tomorrow's politically inevitable. But we're going to require very large numbers of people, whether you fish or not, in singing off the same song sheet. So it's www.legacy.com. legasea.co.nz. All we'd like to know is your email address and your cell phone number so we can call you as and when and if the email bounces. We've been doing this for many, many years. We fully understand privacy. There will be no other conversation other than this passionate desire to restore, ensure abundance and ensure future generations get a fair go.
I am speaking with the formidable and redoubtable Scott McIndoe of Legacy, taking care of your fish for tomorrow and for your children's future. Now, Scott, government, big government, and how they work. We've got to establish a small and tightly focused Ministry of Fisheries, whereas before it was under the larger heading of primary industries. We need to refocus it, don't we?
Correct. We had a Ministry of Fisheries. It was captured. It was put to death. It's gone. It got folded into the Ministry of Primary Industries, where it's still captured. It's completely wrong for it to be there. That ministry has a remit from Cabinet, from its minister, double the export of primary produce by 2025. There is no way that that is compatible with restoring inshore abundance. That is completely incompatible with public interest, ensuring the fair go for future generations. So for us, it's very clear. Re-establish an independent ministry. It needs to be small, it needs to be very focused, and it can be. It doesn't have to be a behemoth. It's got the magnificent Niwa there to serve, and it's on standby. There's information technology, the likes of which we've never had. It was inconceivable when this botched privatization was put together in the 80s. There's no reason why we need to have a whopper ministry. It just needs to be tight and not able to be captured. So that's an important plank of policy for us. And finally, we need to amend the Fisheries Act to remove maximum sustainable yield as the management benchmark. We need 50% of the unfished biomass as our target. Today it's about 20, 22, 23, 24% of the unfished biomass, i.e. what was in the water before we started applying industrial technologies to harvesting that fish. We're way under. That was put in place many, many years ago, maximum sustainable yield. Today's well-settled international best information says there's a far better outcome all round at 50%. So many of our stocks are today being bragged by industry and ministry as being above sustainable yield thresholds. Well, the thresholds are wrong. They are far too low.
So what you mean is that essentially commercial fishing can take 75% of the fish out of the water and only leave 25%, and we're finding now that the fish can't recover fast enough. But if we leave 50% in the water and only take 50%, there's a better chance for the fish to recover. Is this what you're saying?
Close. We need to have at least half of that original stock in the water. We can't take 50%. They're gone. We can only take about 4 or 5 or 6%.
Thank you.
That's there, and we need to do so using methods that are respectful, and we just need to start being intelligent about it. It's madness for us to be competing with this commodity attitude, bulk harvesting and freezing this super premium product and then expecting the world to pay some sort of a premium. We live about as far away from the marketplace as you can get. We need to get smart. Yeah, so fishing mortality on most inshore fish stocks needs to be massively reduced if we are to rebuild to 50. And that's not just commercial taking the hit. These new policies need to be embraced by the public. And in our opinion, the only way that can be done is by the public having a really good, close affiliation with a trustworthy, reliable organisation such as Legacy, New Zealand Sport Fishing Council, so that they can have these complex decisions or policies explained to them in full. It's not something that can be done in a 30-second television soundbite. They need to be getting it steadily. So that's my mission, Tim, to build this database of legacy, to come out with large numbers of people. We are blessed to have the support of over 400 businesses and affiliated organizations. We really are enjoying a renaissance, if you like, of alignment, of a unified voice. People like Yachting New Zealand and the New Zealand Angling and Casting Association, the New Zealand Underwater Association, who 15 years ago we struggled to see eye to eye with. Today, a great deal of mutual respect. We are funded, and we do need money, we're funded by organizations like ITM. All 100 of those businesses have signed up to be platinum partner with Legacy. Significant amounts of money. Hunting and Fishing are a platinum partner. Rod and Reel have been there since the beginning. Thank you, Doug Rankin. Magnificent support from Rod and Reel. Burns Co. have recently stepped up to platinum from a couple of years of gold partnership. These organizations are committed. They're seeing good outcomes of being associated with Legacy. There's another 30 or 40 businesses there as gold partners. We've got a lot of Japanese, Yamaha and Honda and Shimano and Daiwa.
Okay, yes.
All aboard. We're starting to see the hull manufacturers stepping up to the plate. So we're very excited about, if you like, enjoying some organizational credibility that's translating into cash, because to do this business of supporter engagement, of writing in all the various magazines and generally turning up, being there, getting your hands dirty at the boat show and the field days and so forth, requires contractors, supporting volunteers, but contractors. We are on track to 8 full-time equivalents. Those are many mouths to feed. We have some grant-making organizations who share and have the similar or same policies and principles or objects. And between the corporate partners and the grant-making organizations, the running costs of Legacy are being met so that 100% of public contributions is invested in fisheries management engagement and relevant research. No slippage. It's a thing of great beauty.
Scott, there's another big one here. Fishing is now a privilege, not a right.
You're not wrong. And boy, oh boy, have we got a dark side to address. This business of utilization, this business of doing the right thing, going the extra distance. You've caught the fish. It's all in. It's given its life. You've had your fun. Now it's back to the beach. No way is it acceptable to take the fillets off that fish and discard the head, the throat, the frame. There are so many people out there hanging out for that fish. We've got the magnificent freefishheads.co.nz program up and running. Thank you, Matt Watson. Wow, you really did take a fantasy and turn it into a reality. There's over 20,000 people registered saying, please, if you've got spare heads and frames, here I am. I'm ticking the box that represents where you are. Go online, freefishheads.co.nz. Tick the box of wherever you happen to be, Weymouth or Helensville, and you will be staggered at how many people are there with their name and their cell phone number waiting for your call. By and large, well, in some respects, it's been too successful. We've got people doing the right thing, making the call, taking a bit more ice, looking after their heads and frames. Connections, matchmaking, if you like, over fish heads. These beautiful,
yes,
beautiful relationships coming, and they don't need to go back there because you've found someone out there who really does appreciate your willingness to go the extra mile, and you stick with them. And the heads and frames are now reaching the appropriate utilization value, and the free fish heads becomes obsolete.
Yeah, really important, because I've noticed when you are with, say, an Asian fisherman, they will take the whole fish away. they'll just discard the gut, but everything else in the fish, they take it home and they'll cook it from the lips to the tail, and they will eat it and cook it in such a way, using all their different sauces and herbs, etc., they turn it into a fantastic meal, where we have a tendency to take a slab off one side and a slab off the other side of the fish and throw the whole fish away.
Mana Whenua described the head as the rangatira kai. The chief gets the big head. Don't think you're going to get away by giving the chief a medium small head. If you don't give the chief the big head, then you're on thin ice. More recently, the Outboard Boating Club of Auckland have got together with the Papatua Nuku Kōkiri Marae in Mangere. It's a beautiful story. In a mere 6 months since the Memorandum of Understanding was signed late last year, the Marae have collected 6,000 kilograms of heads, frames and offal, taken it home, sorted it out, tidied it up and distributed that rangatira kai to needy, appreciative people. It's a beautiful thing. The offal is being buried in the gardens that they are using to grow kumara to feed their community. This Papatua Nuku Kōkiri are on a mission to reconnect people with real food. They are seeing quite clearly that much of the consequences of poverty or drug, alcohol, crime, whatever, where people are on the bottom of the heap, is about the nourishment, about the food imbalance, the disconnect. This is where I get really emotional when I see and hear about these large numbers of dialysis machines at Middlemore Hospital, where there's a queue of people, the single biggest concentration of Polynesians in the history of the planet. And they're suffering all manner of diet-related illness, the gout, the diabetes. And here we are, as a nation, exporting millions and millions of kilos of high-value oily fish like skipjack tuna for $2.50 a kilo. What about our own people? We're turning our back on our own people. What would happen if you put a 40-foot container of frozen skipjack tuna in Mangere and a little bit of broadcasting and said $5 a kilo? Do you reckon anyone would turn up?
Be empty by lunchtime.
Gone by lunchtime. So we really do have to lift our game. Kia ora to the Outboard Boating Club of Auckland. You've set the benchmark. You've really raised the bar for all of us. And you've proven that we can do it with a bit of care, a bit of intelligence, some leadership, some new freezers, a food-grade quality floor, and some separate refrigeration for heads and frames and offal, and then ultra-reliable, committed people at Papatua Nuku. So I'm really delighted to have had a small part in the establishment of that beautiful partnership, and we're looking to expand that because there's infinite demand for this rangatira kai.
So, Scott, we have this election coming up. We need to galvanise the people to be involved at whatever level they can, because food, health, fish and continuance of our abundance is so important.
So as you square up to these party policies, please pay attention to their fisheries policies. It's really simple. Are we willing to include an allocation principle? It's an obvious gap in the legislation. Are we willing to remove industrial fishing methods, trawling, seining and dredging from the inshore zone? Are we promising a separate, well-resourced Ministry of Fisheries tightly focused? Are we in behind the call for a Royal Commission of Inquiry? There's a set of simple questions to ask when you are reviewing political party policy. If those aren't there, then, as I said, make a call. If you feel you need more information, to Legacy at 0800 Legacy, or send an email. By the time we get to election, we will have a really good analysis of these party policies, which will allow you to say, yep, that's a high score, that'll do me.
Tell me, Scott, what else is Legacy doing to improve public behaviours and appreciation of this magnificent resource we've got on our seashore?
Recently, and thanks to some generous contributions from a range of trusts, the Foundation North, the Lou and Iris Fisher Foundation, we have been able to afford to get up and deliver a program we call fishcare.org. And that's our attempt to capture in one place best practice, how to best handle a fish, how to utilize that fish, how to care for that fish. And it's not just a once-over lightly single sheet. This is a booklet. This is going to be a website. It's going to be an iterative and dynamic place. So FishCare, with its project leader, Scott Cushman, is out there. We're on to our third version of the brochure. Every time we print, we've got people coming and challenging us or suggesting, and we're trying very hard to embrace those contributions. The charter fleet are making some fantastic suggestions. Of course, they see this action all day, every day, and many of them are retired fishermen, commercial fishermen. So we're starting to embrace their wisdom and incorporate it into fishcare.org. I encourage people to go there. You'll get all sorts of recipes, how to deal with a fish's head. And believe you me, that is not as straightforward as you think if you really want to get the best out of it.
Very true, yes. I think we've got a lot of old people. I spend a lot of time talking to old people and ask them to compare today with their day. 60 years ago, I know off the Maharangi Peninsula, they were talking that 10 kilometres out, there were herds of hapuka. And hapuka, there's something like about, I don't know, 80, 90 kilograms. They're gigantic fish, used to be out there, and there's none there whatsoever. And so older people say, yes, we've got to do something for the future.
Yes, the serial depletion. The hapuka was the first to vanish. As a child, my upbringing at Whangaparoa saw hapuka in the bin. That was my dad fishing with his mates off Kawo Island. Canoe Rock, they used to call it, Flat Rock today, and yes, they would invariably come home with a hapuka. The gurnard was very much a part of the deal. We didn't keep kahawai or trevally. They weren't rated because there were so many other beautiful fish. So we see one species after another pushed out. We call it serial depletion. This has to be arrested. That can't happen under the quota management system. The fisheries management areas are simply too big. From North Cape to East Cape, that is Area 1. That's where the people that really we're talking about live, in the Waikato, the Bay of Empty, the Thames, Coromandel, Tamaki Makaurau, your beautiful Matakana, Omaha, and then all the way up north. So fine-scale fisheries management is not possible under the QMS. Subdividing those giant fisheries management areas is in the hands of the quota owners. They need to have a 75% agreement. So we're really struggling on that wavelength. We're seeing the collapse of Cray 2. It is a crisis. Cray 2, which goes from Te Arai Point in the north, Mangawai, if you like, down to East Cape in the south. It's a vast area that encompasses so many people. We're seeing the commercial sector having to double their effort to catch what they are allowed to catch. The management is administered by what's known as a management rule, where catch per unit of effort is the indicator, the relative abundance index. And we're seeing Cray 2 CPUE, catch per unit of effort, now less than 0.3 of a kilo per pot lift. What that means is, on average, a commercial fisherman is having to do three pot lifts, three cray pots up, baited, dropped for each 1 kilogram of crayfish. That's absurd. That would see other fisheries, cray fisheries, around the coast of Aotearoa shut down, closed. But here we are with the massive population of Auckland and Hamilton and Tauranga focused on this area, fishing at this sustainable depletion. Meanwhile, the minister is saying, move along, there's nothing to see. or I'll bring the review forward a year. We're saying close it. The Sport Fishing Council did a survey of its members and had a remarkable 800 and something immediate responses. More than 70% of those people are saying close the fishery. Everybody.
Yes, easy.
Take a break.
Rahui.
Start doing some proper science. But no, we're not able to do that under the QMS, and we will continue to see this particular fishery, this important ecosystem service provider, that koura, crayfish, that roams the rocky inshore and then heads offshore and comes back in. Amazing ecology and biology smashed into oblivion. It will take a very long time to recover. In the meantime, all sorts of carnage with that imbalance, that interconnectedness that is this delicately balanced, complex set of species. We're seeing what are known as kinner barons,
sea urchins
emerging, which is the lack of the large predator snapper crayfish, creating areas of just stark, bare, desolate. We've got to restore the balance, and we call this ecosystem management, not the single stock silo type fisheries management that the QMS is all about. So, as stated repeatedly, it's time for a comprehensive review. I've taken aboard your input there, Tim, about the need to ensure real balance on the Commission of Inquiry panel, and I'll do whatever we can to do that. When and if we get our citizens-initiated referendum up and running, we need wet ink. You're not allowed to do it electronically. It has to be old school.
Agreed.
On paper.
Agreed.
And to get over the line with 340,000 people, that's what these non-binding citizens-initiated referendums require, is going to need thousands and thousands of people out there harassing, encouraging, convincing their friends and family to sign up to make this statement truly heard.
And finalising, just like the end of the TV news where they put on a warm fuzzy, have you a warm fuzzy to end for all listeners?
Oh, it's all so dark, and it is a dark place. I sometimes despair. When I get the Facebook or pictures texted to me from the Papatua Nuku Marae, the short little videos of these heartfelt messages of appreciation from people who clearly need that rangatira kai, and I think about those people going that extra distance, not just tossing it over the side, but pulling the gills out, pulling the guts out, giving it a rinse, putting it back in the bin with a bit of ice and bringing it home and getting it into the chiller so that it can get from Outboard Boating Club out to Mangere and into the hands. We served up to a Tongan funeral the other day two full bins of immaculate heads and frames, and the messages of appreciation back from those people, that makes it all worthwhile for me.
And the website for Kai Eka?
At this stage, legacy.co.nz. We're now thinking and working on next level plans for Kai Eka. There's a lot of coordination, there's a lot of food quality and health and safety.
Scott, as usual, thank you for your dynamic offering to the New Zealand public today.
You're very welcome, Tim. You're much appreciated yourself, brother.
Thanking you. Cheers, bro. That was Scott McIndoe, spokesperson for legacy.co.nz. You can listen to Green Planet FM on planetaudio.org.nz at 8 a.m. every Thursday, wherever you are on our planet, and have a complete live stream. And you can then also listen to it for the next 7 days by going to planetaudio.org.nz, English, Green, then Green Planet FM. Then iPod and stream can be obtained 8 hours after broadcasting on greenplanetfm.com, which has a huge database of interviews, close on 400 now in the archive. And you can also subscribe to iTunes.com or listen to iHeartRadio. You can follow Green Planet FM on Facebook at facebook.com greenplanetfm and twitter.com/greenplanetfm. This is Tim Lynch in the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. I look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.